The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development with your host, Pamela Robinson. International organizations, government agencies, and communities are addressing the challenges of developing a highly skilled, productive workforce to support positive economic and social impact. By staying on the cutting edge, you and your business stay ahead. Now, here is your host, Pamela Robinson.
Well, welcome to this week's show. I'm very excited about our topic today because we're rethinking some issues that will help shape the future of workforce learning and development. And one of them is rethinking diversity and redefining diversity towards innovation and market growth. And we have new research that's out from the Center for Talent Innovation. And our guest today is Melinda Marshall. Welcome, Melinda.
Oh, thank you, Pamela.
Thank you so much for being on the show. And I'm really excited to share the insights that are produced in this recent research and that has been sponsored by some major firms like Bloomberg and Bristol-Myers, Cisco, Deutsche Bank, Siemens, Time Warner, and the list goes on. So, Melinda, tell us a little bit about the role that the Center for Talent Innovation has and what your role is there.
Yes, I'd be delighted. So the Center for Talent Innovation is a think tank. We're based in Manhattan, and we work with a task force, a private sector task force of some 80 global and multinational organizations. And that partnership has given us important access into some of the issues and some of the case studies that made this research that we do so robust. I'm director of publications here, and I played a lead role on the Innovation, Diversity, and Market Growth study that we just released in September. And I'm excited to share with you what those findings are.
Okay, great. So before we get into the details of this rich research, what was the premise of doing the research in the first place? How did this all come about?
Well, I think, as most of your listeners will know, the word innovation, that there's even fatigue around that word, which is ironic because it shouldn't fail to excite. It's really the lifeblood of our organizations and our task force, and there's no choice about it. If you want to survive, let alone thrive, you've got to be not just a one-hit wonder, but have serial innovation to open new markets, to expand market share. So looking at that, what had not been said, what had not been looked at, what had not really been the focus? The focus in corporate America, at least, has shifted thinking about innovation around kind of the boy genius model. You know, if you say innovation, honestly, the first image to crop up for most people is somebody like Steve Jobs. We associate innovation with kind of the lone genius. And in fact, there's another field of thinking which we're quite in touch with because we are an organization interested in promoting different kinds of talent, but that Scott Page at University of Michigan had made mathematically clear why crowds have a kind of wisdom that experts don't, that diversity trumps ability, that the more toolkits from the more people all come to the table with different problem-solving toolkits, he calls them. And the more you harness of those, the more likely you are to arrive at a solution or predict an outcome. So that research had really coincided with the interest in our task force for understanding how to make better use of the talent in their workforce. And that really was this intersection. Could we show, that's what we set out to do, could we show how diversity might in fact drive innovation? Could we peel away the layers here to understand what role it played, since it was certainly theorized to play a role. And that's what's the mechanism.
Okay, great. So that sets the foundation for it. So that means in order to peel that back and for us to even unpack it today, we've got to look at it and redefine diversity as it moves towards, you know, innovation and market growth. So how did you all make that definition? Because you have two dimensions going on, and I'd like you to kind of expound on that.
We do have two dimensions. Certainly, it's a shame that diversity is often thought of in only one very narrow spectrum, at least here in the U.S. We define diversity in two ways, and the two dimensions are inherent and acquired. Inherent diversity really describes embodied difference, you know, the traits you were born with, and that you've been conditioned by, such as gender and ethnicity, sexual orientation. But acquired diversity is where we feel we've mapped some new terrain here, because acquired by that word we are suggesting, it's not who you are, but it's how you act as a result of what you've experienced or what you've learned. And a lot of experience that hasn't maybe been prized for the diversity it confers, living abroad, certainly it leads you to appreciate other cultures. Or if you were to have worked with exclusively one demographic, you might have gender smarts because you've been selling to women for 20 years. Or if you'd grown up with a gay sibling, this might confer on you an appreciation of the other. And that's where acquired diversity is maybe undersung in the role it plays, especially in leadership. So it's these two dimensions, acquired and inherent, that we find together in a company, in its workforce and its leadership, make a profound difference in the innovative outcomes it can lay claim to. In fact, we had sampled some 1,800 respondents, and they made clear that if they happened to be at a company who had both this inherent and acquired diversity, within the last year, they were actually 45% more likely to have improved market share, and their company was 70% more likely to have captured a new market.
Okay, that's interesting, because I just want to go back to the definitions, the dimensions that you have, because that's very insightful. Because it seems that the inherent diversity is the one that really a lot of times gets a lot of the attention.
Too much,
and sometimes
perhaps.
Sometimes you kind of scratch your head. It's like, isn't this intuitive? You know what I mean? To have this, and the fact that we have laws behind it on top of that, at least in the U.S. But the acquired diversity, where you're talking about cultural fluency and generational savvy or gender smarts, this seems to be more of behavioral-based, experiential, that would advance the company further, as you're describing in these statistics.
It absolutely does. And we found it in our case studies as well. The link here that we had surfaced, in fact, we isolated behaviors in leaders that tend to be highly correlated with the most robust outcomes. So where companies are showing great results, what are their leaders doing? What are their leaders doing to elicit those great results? And that's where we found that the leaders who exhibit certain behaviors, we will call them aggregately inclusive behaviors. Mm-hmm. The leaders most likely to have those behaviors happen to have at least three of these acquired diversity traits or attributes. So it would be much more likely to find in a leader who was coaxing out the potential on his or her team that leader had lived abroad. That leader might have had military experience. That leader would speak multiple languages. That leader might have be boy, you know, have generational savvy or social media skills, but these would crop up more in the leaders that were getting the most out of their teams. So that acquired piece is really quite important in its correlation to the key behaviors.
Wow. So this is really important to our listening audience, because when you're talking about showing actual outcomes and saying that there is a correlation to at least three of the acquired, then you get some science behind this rather than just, you know, opinion or other people's or one-sided experiences. So having said that, what were some of the outcomes that you actually saw that you kind of measured against?
Well, in fact, the outcomes would be more passion, more engagement. Certainly, the outcomes that we were measuring were largely innovative potential from the team.
Oh.
And I think when you look at these six behaviors, so, for instance, empowering others to make decisions, listening to being able to share credit for team success, very important, ensuring that everyone speaks up and gets heard, making it safe to risk proposing novel ideas, empowering team members to make decisions, I think I mentioned that, being able to take advice from the team and course correct based on it, and likewise to give feedback to the team to help them change course. These were the most impactful behaviors in terms of innovative potential. And what we measured as well was the effect we had from our research and our the Scott Pages of the world recognized that in any corporate culture, in any organization, in anywhere where people have to solve for problems, to get those toolkits, it has to be an environment where people feel they can speak up and be heard. And if you think about it, that's kind of obvious. But in fact, a lot of the leadership paradigm, at least in our multinational companies, is the Jack Welch model, right? You think about command and control. You think about being forceful leaders rather than those leaders who can create a place where the quietest voice in the room gets heard and make sure that everyone listens to someone who might otherwise not have the functional expertise that would immediately get them heard. It's creating that environment where you claw back some of the innovation at the edges, because that's where, in fact, it might be. If you think about where in the world the next markets are going to be and who represents those rapidly growing demographic groups, it's going to be women. It's going to be people under the age of 34. It's going to be a number of cultures that aren't necessarily represented in the leadership of our companies. So it's doubly important that they be able to create that environment where those underrepresented voices can be heard and get the kind of backing they need to go forward. Because one of the things that we found was leaders are inclined to advance an idea or win the buy-in for an idea or see it through and get it funding if they personally see a need for it, if they personally understand it. Well, if they don't, that's snuffing out a lot of innovation. And if, in fact, most leadership is Caucasian and American or Northern European, that filter might be imposed on ideas from the group that would otherwise meet these underserved demographic groups. So,
okay.
In fact, that's the key, the speaker culture.
That's very interesting. When we come back for break, I want to delve into that a little bit more, because when you're talking about these different aspects, that goes into a couple of things. One, the culture of the organization, and two, retention, whether somebody decides to stay with the firm or stay with the organization or leave and go pursue something else, which means you get lost talent. And so these things are really critical and a little surprising. I thought you were going to mention other things that were very obvious, like, you know, the financials and all of those key things. But these are the underlining things that make a company become innovative. So stay tuned. We'll be right back in this insightful research.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Do you have professionals waiting to get a seat in a required acquisition course? Why not bring DWIA certification courses to your local community? Financial Voyages LLC is partnered with the Department of Defense's Corporate University, Defense Acquisition University, DAU, as a certified equivalent provider offering DWIA certification courses. Call us at 770-379-0950 to discuss the benefits of becoming a local host organization for DWIA certification courses by Financial Voyages LLC, or go to www.teamfv.com. If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. Cheryl G., Jenny Frumer, John Janetta, and Linda Shube? Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development. To reach Pamela Robinson or today's guest, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to fvradio@teamfv.com. Now, back to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development.
Well, welcome back to the show. And if you're just now joining us, we're talking about redefining diversity towards innovation and market growth. And we have Melinda Marshall with us from the Center for Talent Innovation. Melinda, before we went to break, we were talking about the research and that you all have conducted over several years and some of the outcomes that you mentioned, like passion and engagement and sharing and having a safe environment, and how that really does influence the culture of an organization, and that it tied into what you described as acquired diversity, like cultural fluency and gender smarts and social media skills. So tell us about the methodology that you all use. Now that you have these outcomes, you have the premise of the research, you looked at 1,800 respondents. And so what else about the methodology that you used in order to reach your key findings?
Yeah, in fact, because our task force comprises companies like Siemens and Time Warner and Deutsche Bank and from every sector, we were able to examine the evidence of this on the ground, as it were. We were able, in particular, at Cisco, to sit in on, they have kind of an entrepreneurial cell. It's called Action Learning Forum, and these forums essentially take up-and-coming leaders and throws them into a group that has very little in common and crosses time zones and functions and divisions, and certainly their backgrounds reflect that. And they're pitched together for 16 weeks, and they're given a live-fire exercise. It's not theoretical. They're to come up with a billion-dollar idea, and they have 16 weeks to put it together and then present it. And the leadership of these groups and the composition of these groups was pretty seminal in showing us how the diversity within the ranks and the inclusive behaviors and acquired diversity of the leaders put this crucible for innovation. And I dare say a number of the billion-dollar ideas, certainly maybe you're familiar with smart grid, but this is overhauling the U.S. Power grid, because our needs and our ways of communicating when we have an overload on a grid as opposed to when we're not getting any power, it's never been two-way. That was an idea to have come out of these entrepreneurial cells. And studying innovation where it was happening and where it was working in these companies, and interviewing over 100 innovators was augmenting that survey of 1,800 respondents. So we had both the qualitative and the quantitative to inform our view.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I'm very familiar. We use the action learning as well. I love that. So is this where you were getting the genius of crowds?
Well, the Wisdom of Crowds had certainly been a popular book, and it had put a lens on something that, again, others had noticed, that if you have a group of experts, you're actually less likely to bring to the table the array of toolkits that could arrive at a solution. And certainly that's what we saw in many of our case studies, where the inherent diversity, so if you had somebody from HR and you had somebody from sales and you had some IT expert and you had people whose cultural backgrounds and languages and where they'd grown up, if you had that kind of soup, if you had that kind of crowd, you were drawing on so many sources of wisdom that went above and beyond what ostensibly the problem was. So if you're trying to solve for a telecommunications problem, or you're trying to anticipate what the next big thing should be and what that product array should look like, you need to draw on much more than telecommunications expertise. And that was borne out over and over in the groups that we studied, in the case studies that we did.
Wow. What, as you went through this, both the quantitative and the qualitative, were there any surprises that came out that maybe you didn't expect or gave you more insight into this realm?
I think, the list of behaviors that we generated from watching leaders in action with innovative teams, it was a pretty robust list. Let's say there were 30 that we tried, and eventually 22 in our survey that we gave respondents an opportunity to weigh in on what were the most important in terms of getting innovation out of their teams. And it did surprise us that those six that I mentioned before our break about speaking, allowing everyone to speak up and making sure they felt safe and putting risky ideas out and empowering them to make decisions and giving actionable feedback and taking advice and course correcting, these turned out to be aggregately very inclusive behaviors. And I think we were stunned that they should so that the highest correlation to outcomes, positive outcomes, would give us these six in particular. Because, again, our model of Western leadership and the ways in which we think we're going to get results sometimes is at odds with what you see in more emerging market leadership models, where there's more collaboration, there's more listening, there's more credit given to those who might in other environments not get that kind of audience and backing.
Okay, great. And that's really insightful. I'm looking at the six areas that you talked about creating a speak up culture. And this is where you're calling it the inclusive leader behaviors, correct?
Yes, which are so correlated with that acquired diversity that we talked about before.
Okay, wonderful. And then can you share any case studies of how this shows up in industry, how it shows up in companies?
Yes. We had in a media company discovered, for instance, at Time Warner, they had put effort into over a long period of time, over a 10-year period of time. They were much more intentional about building out a team that was representative of minority audiences, because to boost viewership, to really tap into the 40 million minority viewers in the U.S., what kind of programming and who would be on the programs, right? It actually required a much more representative team at Time Warner to understand those audiences and to vet the kind of programming that would win them over. And in fact, Time Warner did just that. Effectively, they through Turner Broadcasting Systems, which is a division of Time Warner, they succeeded in putting together a lineup on Wednesday nights that roped in that vast viewership that other channels, other cable providers, were simply not able to command.
So that I guess now tie that back to, because when that's discussed, you know what I mean, using that from a U.S. perspective, is that more inherent diversity or does that fall into the acquired?
Well, I would say Time Warner has both dimensions at work. They're one of our companies that have both inherent and acquired at work. I can tell you that at Standard Chartered Bank, for instance, a very successful innovation of theirs was brought forward by a woman who had been head of retail banking in India, and as a woman and as an Indian, she had noted that the growing potential, the potential to expand their consumer base to women in India, it just wasn't taking off, and she had a hunch that women who came into the bank and were looking to ask questions or looking to get information, their treatment and the way in which they felt included or not, or condescended to, she wanted to change the interaction, and she wanted to change how Indian women felt about banking at Standard Chartered. And she succeeded in getting the buy-in necessary to create two all-women branches. These were entirely staffed by women, even down to the security guards. And while they certainly didn't turn away any men, it was a very different experience walking into that branch bank. You know, somebody would approach you with a cup of tea, and there was a lot of art on the walls, and it was a relationship that dramatically improved the experience for that customer base, which Standard Chartered was very eager to grow. And that first year, this was now 2007, those branches, they were performing 145% better than the benchmarks for the rest of branch banking in India.
And see, that's the part that is intriguing to me, because the bringing out that acquired diversity and tying it into innovation and market growth goes right to the heart of companies, of communities, and again, it moves it forward in a way that has not been done before.
Well, I think, you know, in the Standard Chartered example, had
this
woman not met with leadership that perceived the value of her idea, had leadership not had the diversity to see what she was proposing, it wouldn't have gone forward.
That's interesting.
You know, our research underscores that representational or inherent diversity isn't unlocked until you have that acquired diversity piece, at least in leadership.
And that was my next question. Melinda, how does the element of change management play out in this?
Well, you mean in terms of how we might look to staff and recruit and train our leaders and reward behaviors?
Yeah, exactly, because let's say if you're starting out, you know what I mean, with a blank slate, and now you have this insight, then you can kind of shape you know, the environment and the culture and build it off of that premise. But if you have already are at a mature level and maybe you have or have not been getting the results that you're looking for, but now you have this insight, it's not going to happen overnight. So there has to be some element of transcending where you are able to make that connection. Like you're saying, it has to be in existence, you know what I mean, in the leadership realm, and a recognition of that before behavior and actions can take place. So that is part of a change.
Yes, I think a lot of companies are sort of like Dorothy and her red shoes. The answer, the means of enacting this kind of seismic change, it isn't that far away. Many companies in our task force have done a great job at diversifying the workforce across those inherent lines. And I think in leadership, there's the potential to call out and coax out and make more of some of the acquired diversity, that cross-functional knowledge or that cultural fluency or having lived and worked abroad. That it's a matter of intentionality. It's a matter of taking leadership and making clear the value of the speak-up culture and making clear what behaviors need to change based on that. This can be taught. This can be learned. So even if there isn't acquired diversity to the degree we might wish in leadership, they can acquire it. They can certainly learn these inclusive behaviors, and that would be creating the speak-up culture that unlocks what's already there in the way of the inherent diversity with the insights into these new markets.
So kind of building from what you already have in place.
I think that would be a first step. I think, you know, longer term, certainly you might be looking to recruit differently, and you might be looking to promote differently because you might be favoring attributes on a resume or parts of a person's background that hadn't been salient before, as opposed to just looking at their schools or their degrees or the hard skill sets, that I think this acquired diversity piece might shed a lot of light on what kind of leader they could become in terms of unlocking innovation that's kind of dormant at this moment.
Well, but then I guess the recognition of that has to be part of the fabric of the company as well. So
there's no question. And we did find that this two-dimensional diversity, it's really when the company's top leadership has it, has the acquired diversity, has that inclination toward inclusivity, it trickles down, and that's where we see the results. That's where the best outcomes are realized. It
Absolutely.
Does need to start. It does need to be present at the top. Everybody takes their cue.
Okay, when we come back, this is so insightful. When we come back from break, I want to talk about different paths that organizations can take if they're listening to this episode and sharing it within their company. How do you get started? I mean, what's the first step, and then how can you go from there based on what you've seen? So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Do you have professionals waiting to get a seat in a required acquisition course? Why not bring DAWEA certification courses to your local community? Financial Voyages LLC is partnered with the Department of Defense's Corporate University, Defense Acquisition University, DAU, as a certified equivalent provider offering DAWEA certification courses. Call us at 770-379-0950 to discuss the benefits of becoming a local host organization for DAWEA certification courses by Financial Voyages LLC, or go to www.teamfv.com.
Did you ever stop to think that financial health can be a lot like physical health? The financial physician, Luz Gattigna, has helped people on the radio for nearly 15 years. And now he's part of the Voice America Business Channel. By using medical analogies to discuss financial solutions, Lou actually makes the process easier to understand and will help you chart your own financial fitness. Tune in to The Financial Physician live every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, and on demand anytime on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development. To reach Pamela Robinson or today's guest, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to fvradio@teamfv.com. Now, back to the future of workforce learning and development.
Well, welcome back. If you're just now joining the show, we're talking about redefining diversity towards innovation and market growth. And we have with us Melinda Marshall from the Center for Talent Innovation. And we were talking about different case studies and the results of the research that has come out and looking at acquired diversity and balancing that with inherent and just kind of steps that companies were taking moving forward to that market growth. And one of the areas, of course, is continuing to expand on the element of innovation. Melinda, one area that you talked about, what are some of the drawbacks or challenges that companies have faced based on the research?
Well, I think one of the biggest things that hurts companies and continues to hurt companies is their homogeneity. Their lack of diversity in both aspects that we're talking about. And it's remarkable how many major stumbles, we call them cautionary tales, but companies that don't actually understand their end user think they do. They have marketing studies, you know, they have good people working on assembling a picture of that end user, but in fact, without some of the diversity that might understand that consumer, they make some terrible gaffes. This goes back to what we were talking about before in terms of when leadership doesn't have the perspective, the diversity to perceive a value in an idea or value that goes against what they already know. We can talk about certain cautionary tales, or, you know, we have data that shows what this chokehold loses companies.
Can you give us an example of that, of how that plays out?
Yes, I think one of our favorite cautionary tales has to do with a company called Eurostar that had launched in 2011 a tablet. And even at $190, this tablet wasn't a big hit. It was pink. It came preloaded with applications for, I don't know, yoga postures and grocery lists and size conversion charts. It wasn't a hit because this was launched for Middle Eastern women, and yet Middle Eastern women are not people who need to be shown how to load an app or be told what they should be using on their tablet. This misunderstanding of the end user. So at the end of the day, Eurostar unloaded 7,000 of these tablets by February 2013, and in the same period, some 58 million iPads had sold. This was one stumble that a number of companies seem to commit over and over in terms of trying to woo women without having enough women on those innovative teams to say, wait a minute, this isn't going to fly. This isn't what women want. And somehow it gets all the way to market before they recognize they don't have the right toolkit, the right inputs, the right insight.
Exactly. I've seen that in products and so forth, too. We'll say, How many women were on the design team with this? Because it's just those little things that make a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah, pink pens. I mean, we have a list of these things. But it's understandable when leadership is not is homogeneous. In fact, to this day, we're looking at most Fortune 500 companies, most multinational organizations headed up by Caucasian men. Nothing inherently wrong with that, except that they're the gatekeepers on ideas and insights that if they don't get past them, they're not going to make it to market.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because we're talking where much of the growth moving forward in the next several decades is going to come from, some people will call them emerging or growth markets, as we've seen different segments, you know, around the world emerge in a very rapid way. And because of technology, because of globalization. So how does that influence this model when you have opportunities in these growth markets? How does that tie into the study itself?
Yeah, that is our, I think, one of the chief takeaways of our study, that to open new markets or to realize and command the growth in some of the emerging markets, who's going to best understand those end users? Who's going to have the insight? People from those markets, people who represent those demographics. And it's not enough to just have those people on the design teams. There has to be in leadership either similar cultural and geographic and generational difference, or in fact you're just not going to be able to identify the needs in the first place, let alone meet them. There was a lot of innovation from big companies here for the Indian market that just failed to grasp that you can't take a $150,000 imaging machine and turn it into a $100,000 imaging machine and make and say, oh, now we're going to capture the Indian market. It took Indian innovators to really master this kind of frugal innovation, where you recognize that access to electricity may be spotty, so you want to make a battery-powered unit. And you realize that you're going to be carrying it around to people. They're not going to come to you at a hospital, so you need to make it 7 pounds instead of 70. And you need to, in the end, jump to the technology that's going to transmit the results. It has to be over the phone. It has to be equipped for a mobile application. And without that kind of talent, you're simply going to miss out on connecting to that market.
But wouldn't it be a mixture of both? Because is it an all or nothing? Or is it because you do have some skill sets and some experience that you can take from, you know, developed, more mature markets, as well as those that are on the growth trajectory?
There's no question it needs to be a mix. We're embarking on research now to look at more closely global executives, because in some regard you could say, well, what translates as leadership here should translate elsewhere. What translates, what comes across as gravitas in a leader here should come across as gravitas in a Indonesian setting. But of course, there are important differences. We're not ever saying that you have to match the market, that's the only way to realize better connectivity to that market. But it certainly helps, both in the teams that are innovating for those markets and the leadership that has to vet those ideas and find backing for them to get them to market, to have these two dimensions, the inherent as well as the acquired.
That's really interesting. One thing that you brought up that I found interesting is when you're talking about particularly like the deployment, you know, the assumption or the mindset may be that you can go really high tech. But when you're focused in on your emerging and growth markets, you also have to deal with where they are as far as infrastructure is concerned and how things are going to get from one point to the other. And it may not be as given as what you would have in a developed nation.
Yeah, just the sensitivity and the familiarity with the on-the-ground realities is infinitely important. And, you know, a lot of studies can't replace people who have that intimate acquaintance.
Absolutely. And then I also think, you know, based on what you've discussed so far is if companies are going after certain markets or expanding in certain markets, this really plays a huge role into who do you include on the team to sit at the table on both ends?
Yes. I think if you're alluding to the fact that when you want to pitch a client, I mean that sometimes we want to present, we're all about presenting a more diverse team in terms of that initial contact, that initial, you know, we have in our task force consulting companies that have enjoyed an advantage over their competitors because they bring to the client a team whose diversity, again, acquired and inherent, so exceeds and is so visible to the client that the client finds that worth hiring because it augments or it gives them diversity they recognize they're lacking on their own team. And they recognize the problem solving and the insights that represents, and they're eager and willing to pay for it.
That is absolutely wonderful. So this, again, this is bringing a lot of insight into redefining what diversity is towards, you know, innovation and market growth. And when we come back from break, I want to talk about what the next steps are, where you're going with the with further research, and what you hope to gain from actually finishing this research. And now we're sharing it even more with our listeners, and we'll continue that discussion. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Do you have professionals waiting to get a seat in a required acquisition course? Why not bring DWIA certification courses to your local community? Financial Voyages LLC is partnered with the Department of Defense's Corporate University, Defense Acquisition University, DAU, as a certified equivalent provider offering DWIA certification courses. Call us at 770-379-0950 to discuss the benefits of becoming a local host organization for DWIA certification courses by Financial Voyages LLC, or go to www.teamfv.com.
Health costs companies a lot more than just benefits, premiums, and health plans. Think about the underlying cost with not having healthy employees in the program, investing in the future. Creating Wealth Through Health, host Susan Doherty will discuss employee wellness programs, how staying healthy affects the bottom line, and how to get your team engaged in better health as a way of life. Tune in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. You are tuned in to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development. To reach Pamela Robinson or today's guest, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to f teamfvradio@teamfv.com. Now, back to the future of workforce learning and development.
Thank you all for tuning in. We have an exciting segment going on this week, and we're talking about redefining diversity towards innovation and market growth and the new research that's out with Center for Talent Innovation. Melinda, you have a huge task force that you all kind of tap into that's been included in this research. What do you hope to gain? What is your insight or your next steps as far as the research is concerned?
Yes, I think we see this being applied most immediately in terms of changing top management's sense of how important diversity might be. This is really a new business case. I think in a lot of companies, sometimes there's eye rolling at the idea we have to diversify the workforce, that we have to do a better job of diversifying leadership. But in fact, these numbers make the argument that it's vital to their innovation and vital to their success. So that's first. How that translates, I suspect, we're already seeing companies turn into they want to diagnose what kind of culture they have, because it's common to find leadership that says, we're wonderfully innovative, everybody's very excited, we have lots of ideas burbling up, and then we talk to their employees and they present a different picture and their frustrations at not having a forum or a channel in which to even throw out ideas, or suspecting that their immediate manager won't give them the kind of audience or pull in the kind of leadership that should hear it. So assessing companies, getting a sense of what kind of culture is there, and then taking the steps to educate leaders of teams, certainly all the way up the chain, to create that culture. What will those behaviors need to be? I will say that we recognize our research in this report, it's U.S. derived. We are tapping multinational corporations and people who've worked all over the world. But I think our next step is to get more global inputs on some of these questions. For instance, what creates an inclusive leader, what makes an inclusive leader, what makes for a speak-up culture will no doubt differ in different parts of the world. So we want to take a look at that. But I think we're fairly confident that among the behaviors that have shaken out in this research, much needs to be done to educate the leaders who are in place, and then maybe to recruit or promote leaders based on different criteria than we are now, to perceive that competency as a leader might be measured in different ways than we're currently assessing it.
Okay, good. So let's go back a little bit to, you know, the assessment of the culture of what organizations are doing now. So let's say they, whether they're multinational or even for smaller firms as well, they're looking to scale. You go through the report, and Melinda, tell them where they can get a copy of this as well.
Certainly to go to our website. That's www.talentinnovation.org. Best way to come by the report.
Okay, great.
We're also getting some press in. We have a Harvard Business Review will be coming out with an article in December. Those are the most immediate sources.
Okay, great. Okay, so you can tap into that, guys, again on talentinnovation.org, and then definitely look for the article that's coming out with Harvard Business Review. So the senior executives, their leadership reads through this, the readers of Harvard Business Review, and then when you say assess the organization, what does that look like, though? I mean, everyone may be doing it a little bit differently, but are you talking about taking an assessment, calling in their leadership team? How does that kind of scale out?
Yes, I'm part of the research side. We have a consultancy side that helps companies conduct these diagnostics and make sense of the results and understand by teasing out in their ranks who's demonstrating now those six behaviors or
right.
the majority of those, and to make them into role models and to do a lot of training and education that exposes leadership to those in their midst who are already exhibiting these and getting the results that we've documented.
Okay, good. And that lays a good foundation to move to the next step then, doesn't it?
Well, I think a lot of the awareness this report generates makes those who are in talent management, who are in succession planning, who are in learning and development, and managers themselves suddenly become much more aware and intentional about aspects of their background and of their staff's background to look at management differently and to look at what people have to offer on a different scale. I think that intentionality can arm everybody in an organization to start to realize some of the gains that the diversity they already have could unleash.
That's wonderful, and that's also a good note to end on. Melinda, you have been a great guest, and we appreciate you sharing the insights and the results of the research. And I encourage the listeners to go ahead and tap into, go to talentinnovations.org, pull down the results, and take a look at the details and the numbers of the results that came through. Thank you again for being on the show.
My pleasure, Pamela. Thank you.
Okay, you have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you again for listening to The Future of Workforce Learning and Development. Please join your host, Dr. Pamela Robinson, again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.